Okay, good morning. On my turn, I would like to thank the organizing committee for inviting me and for having organized this interesting and very enjoyable meeting. So I will speak about logistic regression, and the work I'm presenting is not completely finished yet, so it's a little bit in progress, so comments are definitely welcome. Okay. So first I will introduce the model. I will speak about M type of estimators, existence of the estimators. I will speak a little bit about breakdown in the logistic regression model, say something about influence function, computation of the estimators, and I will end by an example and some simulations. Okay. So many things that I will present come from papers which are not mine, but I try to give reference, but maybe I have not included all references. Okay, so it's about logistic regression. So we are interested in explaining a binary variable y. So y can be 0 or equal to 1. And then the logistic regression model is modeling the conditional probabilities as being equal to a certain, well, let me call it link function, applied to a linear combination of the active. And during this talk, I will call beta transposed xi the score of the ith observation. Okay, and to keep the presentation simple, I will focus on the logistic regression model, so with this particular link function f, which is also the most popular binary regression model. So the axes are p-dimensional. So a very classical example is the skin data set of Finney. So the binary outcome variable, the variable we want to model, is presence or absence of further constriction of the skin. And there are two explanatory variables, volume of air inspired and the inspiration rate. Okay. Now, the usual way of picturing a logistic regression model is the following. You know this. So on the horizontal axis, we put the scores. And then on the vertical axis, we have the conditional probabilities, and we assume that we have an S-shaped relationship. Now, I will use another geometrical representation of the problem, which was sometimes more helpful for me. So this is the space of the design variables, and in my example, it's two-dimensional, so I can make a picture of it. So if the binary variable is equal to 0, then I have a small circle or a 0. If the binary variable is equal to 1, then I have a 1. Now, the beta regression parameter can also be seen as the vector which is perpendicular to an hyperplane which is trying to separate, in a way, the 1 and the 0 outcomes. Okay? So the direction of beta is perpendicular to a kind of discriminating hyperplane. And the length of that beta vector is telling me how well these two groups are being discriminated. If these two groups are perfectly separated by the hyperplane, then the norm of beta will even be infinity, as probably Peter Husser told on Monday. Now, if the norm of this beta vector is very small, then it means that the discrimination is not so well and that the two groups are quite overlapping and difficult to distinguish. Okay, so the maximum likelihood estimator is minimizing the sum of deviances. So small d is my notation for the deviance function, and if I may make the link to the usual regression model, so the deviances can be considered as a kind of squared residuals, if you want to call it like that. Now let us do a small numerical experiment to show the non-robustness of the maximum likelihood estimator. What we do is the following. We put a contaminating point over here, and I call this a good leverage point. Why do I call this a good leverage point? Well, the discriminating hyperplane is a little bit like this. Now, since my outlier is equal to 1, it is at the good side of the discriminating hyperplane. So that's why I call it a good leverage point. And it is a leverage point because it is outlying in the design space. And what I will do is I will move this leverage point across this line and then see how the estimates change. And of course, if I'm at the other side of the line, then I'm also at the wrong side of the discriminating hyperplane, and then my good leverage point did became a bad leverage point. Now what happens to the estimates? Easy exercise. Following happens. So if I have a good leverage point and I move it, then the estimates are almost not changing. So in a way, the maximum likelihood estimator in logistic regression is quite insensitive towards good leverage points. But for bad leverage points, so if I move the point along this line, then I see that the estimates tend to zero. Okay? So that is something that many people have noticed, that the maximum likelihood estimator under bad leverage points do not tend to infinity, but they tend to zero. Okay? So that's quite different from the usual regression model. And what you can also see is, if you look at the percentage of correctly classified observation, if I have good leverage points, so over here, then it stays quite high, about 80%, but the percentage of correctly classified observation deteriorates enormously if I have bad leverage points. Okay. So that's a small numerical experiment. Now let us try to formalize that with the notion of breakdown point. It's probably the most popular measure of robustness. So you can say that the breakdown point gives the smallest fraction of contamination that makes the estimator break down. Now, if you work with a replacement breakdown point, then I just need to compute, in this example, the smallest number of observations I need to replace before my estimator tends to infinity. Now, if I have complete separation of the two groups, then the maximum likelihood estimator is infinite. That I know. So what do I need to do to have breakdown? I just replace these points to the other side. Okay. And maybe also this point a little bit further away. And then it's possible, if I cheat a little bit, to have a perfect separation of the two groups. So just by replacing three observations, I have complete separation of the groups, and then I have breakdown of my maximum likelihood estimator since it's at infinite. Yeah? This was the approach of Andreas Christmann. And then the breakdown point is the number of observations lying in overlap divided by small n. Yeah? And you can compute this using a certain algorithm that Andreas Christmann and Peter Rousset proposed. Now, this is all quite solid if you use the replacement breakdown point. But if you use the addition breakdown point, then everything changes quite a lot. Now, what is the addition breakdown point? It's an almost identical concept. Instead of replacing observations in the sample by outliers, you are going to add outliers to an existing sample. Now, in most of the examples, there is not really a difference between addition breakdown point and replacement breakdown point, but here it will be quite different. Okay, so I add a couple of outliers to the sample, M, and I want to know what is the number of outliers I need to add before I have, for example, explosion, before the estimator tends to infinity. Now, it is intuitively quite clear that if I start with a sample in which I have a little bit of overlap, so which is not completely separated, if I add observations, then of course overlap will continue to exist and the maximum likelihood estimator tends to exist to be finite. And in fact, it's even uniformly bounded, so over all possible configurations of outliers, the maximum likelihood estimator remains bounded above by this constant. So that means that if I use the addition breakdown point, then I can say that the maximum likelihood estimator never breaks down, at least not to infinity. Yeah? So that's a little bit remarkable. But we know from our example, from the numerical experiment, that the maximum likelihood estimator will tend to zero when you add contamination in the sample. Yeah? And even just a few outliers are sufficient. So when you say that you have breakdown if you tend to zero or to infinity, then the maximum likelihood estimator also has a zero breakdown point, even when using this addition breakdown point. Okay? So for the maximum likelihood estimator, you can prove fairly easy that you have a zero breakdown point if you also say that breakdown is given by breakdown to zero. So if the estimator tends to zero. And now, it turns out that computing breakdown points in logistic regression is quite difficult, unless if you use the maximum likelihood estimator. So if we are going to use other robust estimators, then it's not so evident how you can compute a breakdown point. Yeah? It will depend heavily on the initial sample. Now, let me make a couple of comments on this definition of breakdown point. So it's the smallest fraction of contamination you need to add before the estimator tends to zero or infinity. Well, if the estimator tends to infinity, then the fitted probabilities will be at the edge of their domain of definition. Okay? And if the estimator tends to zero, then the fitted probability is always equal to 1/2. Independent of the explicative variables. So you do as good as a very naive prediction rule. Okay. And in a paper by Stromberg and Rupert about definitions of breakdown for nonlinear models, they also work with breakdown of fitted values. But it was not 100% the same, but there was a kind of link. But if you use the very general framework given of by Jeantot and Lucas, then you can see that this definition of breakdown point in fact comes down to their definition of breakdown point. So I was very happy that this definition of breakdown point, which seems to be a little bit ad hoc, can be put in this more general framework of Jeantot and Lucas. In fact, there are also other situations where you can have breakdown when the parameter tends to a point which is not at the edges of the parameter space, and this was also given by Jeantot and Lucas. So if you estimate an autoregressive model of order 1, then you can say that there is breakdown if the estimated parameter tends to 0. Okay. So we have addition breakdown point, we have replacement breakdown point. Which definition is the most natural? Yeah. Now, I think that in the literature, definitely in the recent years, everybody uses replacement breakdown point. But is it so evident that this is the best way to do it? Now, in most situations, in most models, it makes no difference. You will have the same results. But here in the logistic regression model, you clearly have different outcomes. Okay, suppose that this density here represents the model distribution. And if I work with the addition breakdown point, I add here a bulb of outliers. Yeah? So I work with an outlier-generating distribution, small h. So finally, after having contaminated my sample, I have that a certain percentage of the data comes from the model distribution and another percentage from an arbitrary distribution. And this is exactly the usual contamination model, which is also used when computing bias curves. So this is really what you are doing when you look at bias curves, for example, the classical contamination neighborhoods. Now, if I work with the replacement definition of breakdown point, well, I can, for example, take here the first part of the sample and replace it towards infinity, and then I end up with such a case. So I have here the remaining part of my good data, and here I have my outliers. And then I don't have any more a contamination neighborhood, because after the certain part of the sample is generated by a kind of truncated model distribution. Okay. So if you want to be in line usual contamination neighborhoods, then I think that addition breakdown point is in fact the most natural concept. Okay. So the maximum likelihood estimator is not robust. So let's make it robust. Many people have made proposals. So while the maximum likelihood estimator is defined by minimizing the sum of deviances, you could think of minimizing a sum of, let's call it robust deviances. So the phi function represents a kind of robust deviance. And when I make pictures of this phi function, I will always fix the value of the dependent variable equal to zero without loss of generality because you have this equality here. Okay. So the estimator is then defined as the solution of a minimization problem of this objective function. And then you have these first order conditions. And so the estimator will also solve this first order condition. Now in the literature there are a lot of estimators which are defined directly as solutions of these M-type estimation equations. So I've put here a couple of references. And almost all references define the estimator as being the solution of this M-type equation. But then, of course, you can have the same criticism as in the linear regression model, saying that what if you have multiple solutions, etc. Therefore, it is, in a way, more natural to define the estimator as the minimizer of an objective function. Okay? Which can also allow redescending psi functions here. In any case, in this strictly M-type setup, there are a lot of results existing, also for the inference part and the testing part has been very well developed. Okay, so normally I'm not allowed to call such an estimator an M-estimator. I need to call this probably a generalized M-estimator or an MM as estimate or something like that, but nevertheless I will also call it an M estimate. Okay. So this is a picture of the usual deviance function, and you can see clearly that if the score gets very large, then my deviance becomes unbounded. Okay, so I always picture the deviance functions for the case where the y variable is equal to zero. So high scores correspond normally to a one outcome. So if the outcome is equal to zero, I have here the misclassified observations which receive an unbounded deviance. Okay? So here at the right-hand side, I have the misclassified observations and here the well-classified observations. Okay? So with maximum likelihood, we give too much importance to the misclassified observations, unbounded deviance. So therefore, Preghibon applied a loss function. So he did not work just with the deviances, but he inserted a loss function here. But the disadvantage of this approach is that it's not consistent. So what you need to do is you need to add a consistency factor, and this was worked out by Bianco and Yohai. So that's also the estimate where I will focus on. Okay, so Bianco and Yohai showed that this estimator is consistent and asymptotically normal. Now, what is then the resulting robust deviance function? The deviance function is the phi. Let's see it here. And we see that now this robust deviance function is indeed bounded. So this robust deviance function includes the correction factor. Now there is here a rho function to define, and Bianco and Yohai motivated this rho function by two arguments. Well, it needs to be bounded such that you have indeed a bounded deviance function, and also it's nice that this correction factor, that you have an explicit expression for it. Okay. Good. Now, since we have M-type estimators, the computation of the influence function follows, in fact, directly from general formulas, which you can already find in the book of Huber. But it's instructive to look at the formulas that you have. So we see that the influence function is, aside from a constant, equal to the certain psi function applied to the score, times x naught. Okay. Where the psi function is the derivative of the robust deviance function. So we see that, in fact, the influence function is unbounded with this approach. Here we see the influence function of the maximum likelihood estimator. This line is corresponding with the discriminating hyperplane, and we see that here below we have the good leverage points having small or almost zero influence for maximum likelihood. Here we have the bad leverage points giving high influence to maximum likelihood. If I do the same thing for the Bianco-Yoi estimator, then I see that I have small bounded influence both for good and bad leverage point, except on this ridge here, very close to the discriminating line, I will have psi values which are different from zero, and then the x naught can make the estimator, of course not tend to infinity, but have an unbounded influence. Okay, but please recall that unbounded influence is not meaning that the estimator has a low breakdown point. Yeah. We know that in a regression context, popular estimators like LMS and LTS also have unbounded influence function, but are considered to be highly robust. Okay. Another thing which is interesting to note is that the psi function of maximum likelihood is also bounded. It's not redescending, but it's bounded. So the difference between the classical estimators and the robust estimator of Bianco and Yohai is that here the psi function is redescending. Okay. Now suppose that you want an influence function which is completely bounded, then the classical way of doing that is to add weights which downweight leverage points. Okay. For example, if you do that in the usual or in a very typical way, you give weight equal to 1 if a certain robust distance is below a critical value and equal to 0 otherwise. Okay. And then you will have a completely bounded influence function. So if you want a completely bounded influence function, then you just add weights. Now, an estimator that we will use as a starting value for the Bianco and Yoi estimator, so for the algorithm of the Bianco and Yoi estimator, is the weighted maximum likelihood estimator. So what is the weighted maximum likelihood estimator? Well, it's in fact very simple. You just compute these weights using, for example, the MCD or another robust scatter matrix estimator, and then you compute weighted maximum likelihood. And this has a bounded influence function. So this is different with weighted least squares. So a usual weighted least squares where you just weight on the leverage points will not have a bounded influence function. But here in the logistic regression context, it will have. And it's also easy to compute and easy conditional on the fact that you have a nice algorithm to compute these robust distances. But these algorithms are available. So what you can, of course, also consider is instead of computing a weighted maximum likelihood, you can compute a weighted Bianco and Yoi estimator by adding also weights here in the objective function. Okay. So when trying out our implementation of the Bianco and Yoi estimator, it turned out that in many cases the estimator tended to infinity. Even if we were generating samples having no outliers at all, it arrived quite often that we had what we called explosion, so that the estimator tended to infinity. So you needed to have quite some overlap in the data so that the population of ones and zero had quite something in common, before the estimator existed. And that is, of course, a little bit inconvenient. Now, this can, in fact, easily be solved just by working with another loss function. Okay? So what we want, in fact, is we want that as soon as there is even one point, even just one single point in overlap, that then the estimator already exists. Yeah? So we want, in fact, that we have the same existence condition as for the maximum likelihood estimator. So for the maximum likelihood estimator, as soon as you have one point preventing that it's possible to separate completely the two different groups, then maximum likelihood exists. Well, we want to have the same condition for the existence of Bianco and Juha. And it's possible, in fact, to do that. So, first condition, there is some overlap in the sample, at least one point. This first condition is, in fact, saying the model is identifiable. And then there are some conditions on the shape of that psi function, not very detailed conditions. And our proposal is then to work with such raw function. And I will show you the pictures on the next transparency, and I will not detail the formulas. But also this raw function will have the advantage that the robust deviance function remains bounded, and also that the correction factor still remains explicitly computable. Okay. So above, there was the proposal of the loss function as in the original paper of Bianco and Juha, and this is the new proposal, so to say. And what we see is that the robust deviance function remains bounded and its derivative remains redescending. So we keep to have these two properties. The main difference between the two psi functions is that over here, for the badly classified observations, we go to zero a little bit slower than that we go to zero over here for the well-classified observations. That's, in fact, the main difference. Okay. So from now on, we will work with this other proposal of the loss function, but of course we continue to call the estimator the Bianco-Juha estimator. Well, maybe very quickly. Well, in fact, it turned out that if you use a general optimization routine using weighted maximum likelihood estimator as starting value, then you are not doing too bad. In the beginning, when we tried that out, we had a lot of numerical problems, but these were, in fact, not at all due to that optimization routine. We used an S-plus optimization routine, but just to the computation of the deviance function. So this is, in fact, a little bit stupid, but if you just do a straightforward implementation of the deviance function, you end up with numerical inaccuracies almost all the time. So you can write the deviance function in three different forms. Yeah? And if you just do it straightforwardly, the deviance function is sometimes hard to compute in the sense that due to rounding errors, it gives none available, where in fact the true value is existing and is quite nice. Okay, so you need to be, I'm going to be short on this, but you need to be a little bit careful if you implement this deviance function. Okay. Now, the actual algorithm. Now, what we did is, in fact, the following. We separated the problem into two, as in this introductionary example. So you have the direction of the discriminating plane, yeah? And you also have the length of the regression parameter. So the length of the regression parameter, if I take the inverse of it, then I have sigma, and the direction is then psi. And what I do then is the following. If I have an initial value, a good direction, yeah? So if I fix the psi value over here, well, so I already know in which direction to look, then the length can be solved as a univariate minimization problem, which is easy. Now, if I know the length, yeah, then to find the optimal direction. That's also quite straightforward. There we do a steepest descent algorithm with step halving. Yeah? You need to be a little bit careful because there is a side condition since directions have norm equal to 1. Yeah? And this works very nice. And another advantage of it is that if you have explosion of your estimator, so if beta tends to infinity, so if you have explosion beta tending to infinity, then the sigma is equal to 1. Now detecting whether sigma is equal to, then sigma is equal to 0. Okay? So detecting whether sigma is equal to 0, so whether you have an explosion, that is numerically feasible. Detecting whether something is equal to infinity, that you cannot do, or is much harder to do numerically. Okay. I will not detail on the steps of the algorithm, but it's quite fast. It allows you to detect explosion. But please recall that if you use the new proposal for the loss function, then explosion cannot occur if you have at least a little bit of overlap. And what you also have is that convergence is to a local minimum is guaranteed. Of course, within numerical precision. So convergence to a local minimum is guaranteed. So if you have a good starting value, then everything turns out well. That's our experience. So what can you use as starting value? Weighted maximum likelihood, or even weighted least squares, or why not trying out something like a robust discriminant analysis, since you just need to have the direction good and not the length of the regression parameter. Okay. So we have something which, an algorithm which works fine. Now, how does this Bianco-Yoi estimator compares to estimators which are quite traditional and which are implemented in S+, and we also compared with the S+ implementation? You have an estimator of Kunsch and al, the QPIF estimator, and you have an estimator of Carroll and Peterson, which is called the Mellows estimator. Okay? The simulation setup is the following. So we have first considered just clean data, and then we have a situation where we add some intermediate outliers, and then a situation where we add some more extreme outliers. Okay? So maybe a very, very small, very, very quickly the setting. So this is a typical case. So we have good data, and the outliers, we put them on a line parallel to the discriminating line. Okay. So these are the intermediate outliers somewhere over here, and more extreme outliers are further away. Okay. Now, if we then look at the mean squared errors, then we have the following. So if you have no outliers, then everything is okay. Huh? If you use the previous proposal of the loss function in Bianco-Yoi, you have problems here because the estimator is too often tending to infinity to have a nice mean squared error. And the intermediate outliers, so those who are the most difficult to detect, we see that the Bianco-Yoi estimators give us the smallest mean squared errors. Okay, and we also see that if you have more extreme outliers, more extreme leverage points, then it's really necessary to do a weighting step to maintain enough efficiency. So overall, we can say that this kind of weighted Bianco-Yoi procedure in all circumstances gives reasonable results. Now, for the example I showed in the beginning, you can compute all these estimators, and what is a little bit annoying is that the conclusions differ depending on the robust estimator you use. So applied people will typically be interested in knowing whether the coefficients are significant. Between parentheses, you have the standard errors. And we see that for the Bianco-Yoi procedure, the parameters are, or the estimates are not significant. For the other ones, they are. So that's quite annoying for the applied statistician. Okay. Note that if we delete the two suspect observations, so the observations which are typically identified as outliers, then also maximum likelihood is not significant anymore, or borderline significant. So this, of course, there are real data, so I don't know whether the parameters are truly different from zero or not. So that's always annoying with real data. You don't know what, even if they are real, you don't know what the reality is. Okay, so you can compute the Bianco-Aiohi estimator for logistic regression quite easily. A weighted version of this estimator can compete and maybe even beat other existing estimators. Of course, we need to do a little bit more simulations to confirm this. And by choosing an appropriate loss function, the estimator exists as soon as you have overlap in the data. Okay. That they are equivalent.
In that sense, yes. It's just the same mixing because you are trying to find the worst case of choosing K out of N so you're not
calculating. Well, I did not know that reference, but I'm happy to have it. But the replacement breakdown point, you can choose from your good data. Yeah, you can choose the one you replace as you want. You can go for a worst case scenario. So what is left of the good data points after having replaced them is in fact not a random sample anymore from your model distribution. That is probably indeed an oversimplification. Yeah. But the point I wanted to make is that it's not a random sample anymore from the original model. Okay. Thank you. The only of course, for data analytic interpretation, the replacement breakdown point is maybe more appealing. But the point that I wanted to make is that the addition breakdown point is consisting with contamination neighborhoods. That's the only point I wanted to make. So I'm not favoring one or another. Even that. Okay. I knew that was a dangerous slide to show.
I would like to make a comment about bad leverage points in real data. Could you put up your example again from the beginning?
I need to admit that I use this example purely for illustrative purposes.
It's dangerous, and that's where I'm staying from.
Okay.
I think in this example, actually, when you look at it, the direction is fairly well established.
Mm-hmm.
You can use maximum latitude, it works. And then there's some discussion of how fast it will rise up.
Back by 10:50, we start the second one.